there's also equally passionate folks this far into the work from home experiment who are lamenting, why can't I go into the office yet? So I think that split is people are learning what they do and don't like about work from home and what they do and don't miss from the office.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof. A lot of us are working from home these days, right? That's not a surprise. And there are some really smart people who are trying to figure out how the office layout has to be rethought as we start to congregate in offices more and more, hopefully, sometime soon. One of those people who's leading that conversation is Sam Dunn. He's the CEO of workplace management software firm Robin, which helps workplaces and workplace teams manage meeting space and desk inventory all on the office map. So it's a very interesting thing that you have this company that is tasked with managing the workplace when the notion of the workplace has to rapidly change and become future-proof. And that's why I wanted to talk to Sam. Let's take it away. So Sam, welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you, man. Good to be here.
Yeah, I like to ask a lot of people, pretty much everybody, the same question at the beginning, which is, who are you? Who the heck are you? And what do you do on a day-to-day basis? I know people will have heard this intro I just gave, but in your own words, what do you do? What do you do? How do you define yourself?
I wake up every day and think about the places where we go to work. So I run a software company in Boston called Robin, and what we do is build software that helps schedule and manage the workplace. And so you can picture it in your head, think Google Maps, but for the office. And that's what we've been doing for the last 6 years now. And I do it with my twin brother and one of my high school friends. And we've got 130 of us now.
So I gotta challenge you a little. Obviously, we're recording this mid-July 2020. Our physical spaces, places where we work, as important as they were in January 2020.
Yes, I'd say the workplace guy without workplaces right now. I'd say the big one for us is, when we look at it, it's basically, there are the folks who had work from home or remote working as an option for their job. But a lot of companies, they just hadn't put in the thought or time to develop what it might look like to let people work remotely some of the time. So what this has done is made everyone have to develop a remote work strategy in a hurry, which is a very important part of your workplace. And it's often paired with the ability to come into an office throughout the week as well, because there are some jobs that an office is best served for, group work, even at a distance. And then there's some days where you're going to get your best work done at home. So this new mentality of work from home by default, most of the legacy big companies are all looking around and looking at their facilities teams and looking at their IT teams and saying, guys, we've got to have a workplace strategy here on when and if we're coming back, how, and what space like isn't working for us. And that's shifted the mentality that to show that, look, the office can't just be used for attendance. That is an older way of thinking, and now particularly challenging to make that a selling point to employees as well. I think particularly when there's health and safety concern for crowded space. So you can't just have offices for the sake of it anymore. I think offices are getting a firmer identity. I think people are going to realize what they're for and what they aren't.
Quick little interlude. I lost Sam here because of internet connections, and I'm leaving this little interruption in. You'll see why, because I think it kind of actually informs the conversation we're having. Sam, hey, how you doing?
Hey, sorry about that. I don't know how long I was going before I dropped, and then I realized you froze. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, so it's funny because we were talking right before I lost you about, it's interesting. I was asking you, let me challenge you a little, our physical spaces, of work as important as they were in January 2020. And then what's funny is your internet dropped out, I believe, which is interesting because it almost reinforces the point that we need these offices that are really suited to being productive and getting work done and having the most reliable internet in the world, right?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Some people don't have the same resources at home. And I think on the other side of it, there's folks who really need the sanctuary that is the office as an escape from their families or the noise of the household.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There was a study that I actually just worked on with somebody, and there were so many more people who were open to working from home on a more long-term basis as a result of the shutdown because they were forced to do it for the first time. And now they're a little bit more open to it. And I couldn't help but think if you could slice this data and look to see how many of those people have three little kids at home like I do, you might actually find different answers. Because for me, it's I need to be in an office. I need to just be somewhere else that's structured in a way for me to be productive. And especially if you live in a city, let's say New York or San Francisco, you're not going to have the square footage in your house to outfit it if it was an office, right?
Yeah. And to that point too, when you look at the square footage of a lot of the city places that people have as well, they oftentimes, a common backdrop is they put their desk in the corner of their bedroom or they're sitting on their couch because there's not a dedicated place for them to touch down and work. So I think the first few weeks for us was interesting to see everyone's work from home setup slowly evolve and they figured out how they work best. And that notion of I might do emails in the morning from my couch and then from the counter later, I might do all my phone calls. And moving around the space throughout the day based on the activity is a framework that offices have been trying to drive toward for decades, ever since the cubicle, really. And it was the idea that like offices can be laid out in an activity-based way so that the work you're doing in a conference, in a meeting room, needs to be one level more specific. Is this a show and tell type presentation? Or is this a whiteboard collaboration? Or is this a video interview? So this idea of knowing what work you need to get done and then matching the best place for it, home is an answer some of the time. Many times, coffee shops are answers. And also, when you think about offices that are largely viewed as unsuccessful, you think about those grids of cubicles or those cafeterias that are open office. It's one size fits all. It's not really doing anything other than accounting for people. And I think that veneer has worn off now because I think if I'm going to go to an office and sit in the middle of what looks like a cafeteria surrounded by meeting rooms, I can't also now be weighing a health risk against it too. So it's like, what's going to motivate me to get out of bed and swap from work from home by default into I'm going to go to the office today or the majority of the days this week? And I think that's how I'm seeing people view their presentation, portfolios of real estate right now, because the reality is many of them are sitting on leases that are going to, many offices are sitting on leases that are going to far extend COVID. So really, it's like work with the space you've got and maybe use it as a little bit of a window to get it up to the latest and greatest and really start to make purposeful spaces that are going to earn employee enthusiasm to come into the office.
Yeah, I like that because I think obviously the type of work that you do naturally forces you to be a macro thinker because you're thinking about the long term. You're not thinking about all of the people who might overreact and let's say because things have shut down and looked very different for 3 months, kind of assume that we don't need physical spaces, we don't need to congregate. And it's interesting even studying the 1918 pandemic where a much greater percentage of the population died and then we all still congregated in cities. We didn't say, I guess we're all going to live on farms and telecommute. There's no great reason to believe that human being, like inherent human nature is going to be different this time.
And I like before that even too was Black Plague. So that was what drove everyone out of the main cities and really broke up kind of the feudal land ownership of like the lord and the manor and the farmlands. There was more space that needed than people. So people got to spread out and start building their own farms individually. And I think that's really what the workplace is going to become. When you go into the workplace, it's going to be an array of zones and areas that you can take over with your team for the day. And that's what it is. So you being an employee of a company would basically grant you access to their network of spaces. And I think that's a little different way of thinking, because the goal is to get your team in the office, not necessarily your entire department. Comparison I like to draw to this one is, even if you're going back to the office, you're not going to try to optimize how many people you're spending time with. You're going to focus on, I'm going into the office for a reason. I'm going to get something done with my team members. And that's a lot like when you first get out of quarantine, are you more likely to go to a movie theater or a movie at a friend's place? I think like one is the team example, one is the department example.
That's an interesting way of putting it. I want to spin things also in a different direction, because I know you closed a $20 million round, I think, last year. And you were expecting probably a very different economy than what we're living in now. So how have the events of 2020 impacted how you've grown the company and how you're thinking about what direction you have to go? Because obviously, as an entrepreneur, you have to pivot based off of market conditions. And this is probably a perfect example. Is this impacted things much or not so much?
Oh, it's definitely impacted things. And I think that the common advice that I always got was, look, raise money when you raise money, make sure that you're raising enough to go through like a tough economy or a downturn. And you always kept hearing that. And then now we're in it. From a, what is it meant for us? We got into the workplace by doing meeting room scheduling. So if you've seen an iPad outside a conference room that lets you book a meeting room or unbook it, there's a good chance it's us. If not, let me know. We'll work on that. But from there, we expanded out into desk, because we started building these maps of the workplace, and we realized that we needed to populate them with stuff besides just meeting rooms. So that led us pretty naturally to what's been almost all of our conversations right now, which is, we used to talk about meeting rooms. Now we don't really talk about meeting rooms. We talk about seat assignments, desks, the strategy for where people are going to sit, how far away from one another they are. And the planning aspect of the return to the office has been the saving grace for us. So we needed to evolve our pitch from being the thing that got us to that $20 million round. And part of that $20 million round was us committing to saying, we're going to do the rest of the workplace. And had we not really aggressively pursued desks, I think we'd be having a pretty tough time convincing people they're going to go back to the office room, it's office, and they're going to use their meeting rooms first. So I think that pivot really made us focus on the right sort of a product internally. And it certainly created enough conversations around workplace return strategies that the demand has spiked for us. Like we just had our best month. No, and that's all death.
Yeah, and I think that to me is, in a weird way, there's like all these arguments against capitalism. I think probably one of the best ones is the fact that if you find ways for people to make money, even in tough situations, you incentivize people to solve things, right? And I think obviously that's what you're trying to do, is solve a pain point that people have, because we are all thinking about going back to the office. And you're thinking, obviously, I know about these workplace policies that are going to change. Do you think any of the temporary social distancing guidelines on workplace policies will wind up having a more permanent impact down the line?
Yes. I think the flow of traffic in the office and the space between things, or quote, distance planning of 6 feet apart in the office, I think that's finally giving the office some room to breathe. It's not just everyone crammed in. So I think that's a positive. I think that the way the office looks is probably going to have, it's probably going to be the right amount of pressure to undo the open office, because you're going to need some barriers, but not cubicle level. You're also going to see less fabrics in the office. I think it was months ago, there's months back ordered on all dividers and for the office and most furniture companies. So from the landscape of how the office looks, like absolutely. The policies, it's finally gotten the people responsible for the office in facilities and real estate to coordinate with IT, who's really responsible for the virtual workplace. They've been like VPs of digital real estate, as far as I'm concerned. That's, they stand it up with apps like Slack, Zoom, and Microsoft Teams, all of the things that keep people connected. That's a workplace too. So it's not a versus anymore. You got to coordinate them together.
That's really interesting. I can't help but think that also some people's individual habits, like not necessarily the policies, but habits are going to change. So even if you don't enforce necessarily no talking around the water cooler, let's just say, I don't know if anybody has a water cooler anymore, but the general idea of congregating, people are going to naturally, I think, act differently, even if policies aren't officially enforced. I'm wondering, like, how do we divide up what's human nature, things that are just not going to change, versus what are the things that human beings might almost self-enforce, and the habits that people might have in the workplace, what might that look like?
So if you, in my apartment building, it's down to one person in an elevator. And if I got in an elevator and someone else tried to get in, there would be a little bit of the, wait, what are you doing moment.
Totally.
I think that in the workplace is going to be walking up and interrupting someone. And that's a positive for me, because I think that one of the problems with headphones being the solution to open office was that people would then lurk within your eye shot to try to get your attention. And then you'd have the same interruption. It would just be a little bit more dramatic. Now, the idea of walking up behind someone desk is probably going to be such a no-no that's going to be behavior that I hope stays like that. So yeah, just the casual social collisions of the workplace, which is really something that, like, when you're designing an office, that's normally really thoughtfully planned for. Where are those water cooler places and those kitchens? Where are people going to bump into each other? Now, that's called contact tracing. So I thought, that's a different approach.
This might be also like related, but one thing that I'm thinking about, I'm wondering if people approach things differently if they have an existing company and they have existing commercial real estate, they will maybe retrofit it in a certain way in order to make sure that it's palatable to their workforce. But if I'm starting a company, let's say in August 2020, I'm probably thinking in a different way about the way that I'm going to be building and constructing my office and what I need than if I have already that 2-year lease in place already with an existing company. Does that make any sense?
Yes. And look, some of the leases these people, our lease of the current place we're in, we're 2 years into an 8-year lease. Some of these are 10, 30 to 30 year leases with some of these larger companies. So, yeah, I think that you're going to have smaller tribes in the office. So when you think about why you'll go into the office, it's to spend time with a small number of people that work day. So I think I would focus more of energy on team spaces than company-wide spaces. And I think that the benefit too is that you can get away with almost like this more modular workplace, because I think that any company that's starting right now is probably going to have the benefit also of being potentially distributed. So when and if a collection of people starts to crop up in an area, then you can get a smaller one-off, more flexible lease that's appropriate to the amount of people that might use it. And I think that the idea that everything has to be together isn't true when it comes to teams can be distributed in remote, and also offices. There's campuses and everything else. But right now, I think there's an exercise in like how connected can we be with our remote colleagues? And I do think there's an element of like connected in the up-to-date sense. And then there's the connected in the actual social interaction sense. And I would say that for everyone that's lamented about why I can't, won't my company let me work from home, I've heard there's also equally passionate folks this far into the work from home experiment who are lamenting, why can't I go into the office yet? So I think that split is people are learning what they do and don't like about work from home and what they do and don't and miss from the office.
Makes a lot of sense. I imagine that probably also a lot of companies are thinking about not just the physical changes that have to be made to the workplace, but even the non-physical ones about their corporate culture and inclusiveness. Black Lives Matter and social justice have been really big issues over the last, you know, few months. How do companies rethink their corporate cultures in this moment? Because I think that's probably, there's a good moment to do that when you're rethinking your physical spaces, rethinking the way that you work. It's a good opportunity to rethink your culture also.
Yeah. I think the Black Lives Matter movement, as well as the work from home and COVID, all of that has really made people have to spend a lot of time with themselves, getting to know who they are and who they spend and who you are as a person and who you spend time with. And I think that right now is a moment where authenticity is important because we're calling each other from each other's homes. We're seeing aspects of each other that we hadn't before. And then simultaneously, we're being asked to deal with a lot right now. We can be authentic people. Hey guys, I know you're not going to be coming to the office anytime soon because it would make me a little nervous if you guys all wanted to come in and disregard your commute. So when you guys want to come in, here's what's going to be available to you. No pressure. We won't force anyone through the end of the year. We're seeing some of the bigger companies do this right now. You're seeing a lot of the tech companies on the West Coast have already started to implement a no return until 2021 or not a mandatory return. Some have gone as far, like Facebook said, that they will let everyone work remote. I think that's going to be an interesting challenge, particularly because everyone working remote, their salaries get adjusted to the local area they are in January. So that's a sidestep. But in terms of a culture perspective, not to come back full circle, I think we've all been asked to look at two things, our workplace strategy and also like the workplace culture strategy, because I think we have to respond as companies to what we will and won't tolerate. And we got to be basically good stewards and a good megaphone for the sorts of people that we have and the sorts of people that we want to attract. So I think all that together, we've recently, all of this with Black Lives Matter, really made us take a hard look at what our hiring process was. We're doing now diversity inclusion reports. We're expanding our mentorship programs to underestimated areas locally. So I think we want to make a dent. And I think that it's really rallied people around. What I've been most struck by is the amount of people that I work with that want to be helpful to people genuinely. And that's the sort of folks that I would want planning a workplace. So, man, it's made me proud and it's made me stressed. But I think that you got to earn your employees' enthusiasm here. And to do that, you got to be authentic and you got to be a place that brings everyone together.
I love that. I think it's everybody needs to be a little idealistic sometimes. I'm a big believer in that. We're talking about corporate culture and diversity and inclusion. And I almost got to thinking if physical spaces can in some way promote more diversity and inclusion in the workplace. I can't help but think that there are certain kind of ADA requirements for certain offices, but that doesn't mean necessarily, for instance, that an office is automatically designed to be as inclusive as possible for people who might have some disabilities or even ageism. I never really thought about that, but I think in some ways physical spaces can give off a sense of like a lack of inclusivity depending on how they're designed.
Touch screens have been a really tough handle on some of this. I think that to the idea of like inclusive workplaces, there's some things you can do about mounting all of your displays and interactive things at a certain, at was it 42 or 48, 42 off the ground, which is ADA height. Also, I'd say one that made us more mindful is, since we're designing for the workplace, we're encountering all of the people, not just in our own workplace, but other people's workplaces as well. I have learned more about colorblindness, and I've taken more different colorblindness tests than I thought possible. I would say that one of our earliest oopses with that was our tablet changed like a stoplight, and apparently the stoplight colors that we had chosen all were these exact same lovely shade of salmon, which, not a Crayola color, I don't think. You can probably imagine how just gross that looks to the world. So I think what we did was we started to do an accessibility overhaul. That means the, you know, big text for people who shouldn't have to squint to see what they need to do next. Colors, we want everyone to enjoy the visual palette that is the office. I think also realizing that not everyone participates only through screens. So creating those spaces where folks who aren't necessarily tech natives can learn from their peers. I also think that, like, work put to this whole point about the age difference and kind of the old guard and the new guard in some industries, office designs for lawyers are actually a really good indicator of this. There is a lot of law firms that there's a split between the partners who weren't necessarily tech or email natives. They all have assistants and receptionists. So it's basically like in front of their private office, there is a receptionist. The folks who are tech native, they don't really find it as convenient to have a receptionist do all of their mail and everything else. They want to take more ownership through their tech stuff. So they'll do a hub and spoke model around one assistant that's shared amongst a bunch. So you can see, if you look at floor plans for a lot of law firms, you can get a sense of like where the more established folks in that firm are sitting too.
I wanted to ask you something totally unrelated just to wrap up, because I think this has been really interesting. My brother just had twins 2 months back, and I know obviously you and your twin founded Robin together. So what advice would you give Rocco and Frankie if they wanted to go into business together approximately 2040 or so?
Okay. First of all, most important, get them separate birthday cakes, because this solves, that's my advice. I think it does a few things. One, you should share. You're sharing a birthday. Don't make them share a cake too. And two, you will dwell on who blows out the candle before you did for an entire calendar year. So it becomes a race. So give them separate birthday cakes. I would say let them tinker on stuff together. I think that was always where my brother Zach and I, we always tag teamed projects. It wasn't the thing that we made competitive was learning. If he read a book, I would read a book, and we would swap. We weren't trying to be better for the sake of it. We were just, oh, you read that and you thought it was cool? Trade. Watch where they tinker and make learning the competitive thing.
Really good advice. Sam, I think this has been really helpful. Thanks so much for making the time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Sam Dunn, again, for making the time. I think that the companies that understand the workplace, that really focus on workplace management, those are the companies that are really worth paying a lot of attention to as we enter a new phase of hopeful recovery from one of the longest years I think any of us has ever seen. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Futureproof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Futureproof.